Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Joanne Dahlketter with Performing Edge Coaching International, and we're having our mentoring call. This is June 13th, 2013. So today we're going to talk about, you know, sports psychology in the trenches, which was actually a topic requested by Amy Haller, one of our coaches here. Thank you, Amy. And yeah, it's just, you know, it's great to, I love to get topics from you as coaches, things that you're working on specifically that you need help with, and then we can, if any of you want to, you know, send me information or, you know, an issue that you're having with a client or with your coaching or with your business, then we can focus on that for one of our calls, upcoming calls too. So with this one, you know, kind of wanted to work with, Amy was talking about, you know, doing sports summer camps and doing simple things, how to do simple techniques for clients. So, you know, kind of do a little case study with you, Amy. And also I wanted to mention that, I'm doing these Google Hangout interviews with each of you, and just did one with Amy Haller with you a couple days ago. So I'll send out that link so everyone can watch it. And if you want to see the other ones I've done with you as coaches, just go to youtube.com/performingedge. That's my YouTube channel, and they're all right there. The most recent interviews with all of you are right there, and the one I do with Amy Haller is just the first one there. So it's youtube.com/performingedge, and then you can if you would like me to do one with you, I'd love to do an interview with each of you. So if I haven't done one with you, just send me a time, a couple times and dates that's good for you, and we'll set that up, and I'll send you all the info how to get set up with, and it's very simple with Google Hangouts interviews. So it's like a video conference call, just like Skype, but much better. So, and then you can have that skill to work with your clients on and to do your own webinars, your own teaching and training. So, yeah, so Amy, I'm so glad that you're here and that you can, you know, you had a lot of good questions. Can you tell us what you're doing? Tell me what you're doing with, summer camps and, questions that you have?
Sure. I'm going to be doing two different summer camps. One is with tennis kids, and then the other one is with a ballet school. The one with the tennis kids, they want me to do it on the court with them, so it's going to be more along the lines of the inner game of tennis, visualizing, distracting them with different exercises that makes, you know, them have pinpoint focus, you know, sort of the bounce hit thing where they focus on the sound of the ball and distract themselves from thinking about winning points and things like that. So I've never really done that type of coaching on the court. I've done different things with them where we do exercises and things like that, so this will be different for me. And I did speak to Dr. Joanne about it, and she said, yeah, this type of thing can work really well on the court with them. So that was just one of my areas that I wanted to talk about a little bit, was what are some of the ways and techniques that you can work really well with your clients, whether you're getting them ready for a race or baseball camp or something where you're actually on the field with them or on the court with them, different things that work well.
Yeah, that's great. And I'll give you one example of I've had lots of experience with that, and that's the great thing about sports psychology and these performing edge coach techniques is you can take them anywhere and you can do short exercises, long exercises, and really adapt things according to what your clientele needs, and it's really flexible, and you can, you know, the limits are only in your mind. You know, there's the possibilities are endless as to what you can do with people, and you can work. Depends on if you're working individually, or if you're working with a group, or if you're working with kids or with adults. And or with high school or collegiate athletes, or if it's works all the way up to the Olympic level. So one example, for example, with me when I was at the Olympics, I was working with Stacey Jagila, who got the first ever Olympic gold medal in the pole vault a few years ago. I was in Greece, in Athens, Greece, and so Stacey invited me to work with her there at the Olympics. I'd worked with her all the way up to that for the last 3-4 months before that by phone, and then with different techniques and making her visualizations and MP3s, and then she was in Sacramento at the Olympic trials, so that was close to me. Actually, I was able to go there and work with her at her hotel right after the her practices, and each day we'd review, what she had been doing with the practice that day, and just help her to, relax. And a lot of times in the midst of a competition or getting close to one, athletes just need to, they know what to do. They just need to, some techniques to be able to relax, to be able to go to sleep at night, get good sleep, and know everything's going to be fine. So I worked with her there with kind of reviewing what was happening each day. And then when we went to Greece, in Athens, she invited me to come in the Olympic Training Center, which you have to get a credential to get in, and that's a real prestigious kind of thing to be able to get in. You have to be invited by an athlete, and then you, as their coach, and then you can get a special tag. They're very just like lots of security to get in, and then able to get in and watch their workouts and work with them. So then I went. I was in after like 30 minutes going through security, getting through the door. Or the gate, all the gates there, got into the area where the athletes were working out, and met Stacey and her coach there. So what I did was I just sat on the line right next to where she was doing her workouts at her pole vaulting, and her coach was on the opposite side, and we're just real close there, and so she was. He would give her different cues, different things to think about while she was getting ready for, doing her next jump. And he'd say, things like put your right hand closer to your left hand on the pole, or look down at your right hand this time, or that was good, or that wasn't quite. You need to place the pole in, get it down sooner. Each time she would jump, he would give a cue of some sort. So I would be over there on the other side. I had just my notes and a clipboard, and would write down my notes on the cues that the coach was giving, and so that I knew that the kinds of things that Stacey wanted to be thinking about, and the different times when she did well and the different times when she didn't made mistakes. What she said, I note what she said to herself and afterward, and then the different corrections she was making through the workout. So in this case, I was, I was watching the coach do his thing. Her athletic coach to coach her with her workout there. And of course, I was able to do that, just be an observer. And then I videoed some of it too, and was able to take some pictures, and so I'd give her that feedback too. And then afterward, we went to over the Sports Medicine Center, where she right afterward, athletes want to go ice, get some treatment or icing their legs or hips and stuff. So she would do that, and we'd do a session together right after her coaching there. So it's kind of like being at a sports camp, because, the ultimate sports camp, Olympic Training Center, and she had done this workout. And so right afterward, all these cues are kind of fresh in her mind, and what just happened is fresh. So she'd talk about it and the areas that she felt strong in and what she had problems with, and we'd review the session she just had with her coach. and then we'd do and the things that she wanted to work on for that day, you know, reinforce in her mind the things she wanted to work on, and, you know, like being more relaxed and holding her pole just right before she got started, getting positioned correctly, and so we'd talk about those cues, and so I had this whole list of, you know, cues in the conversation she was having with her coach right there with me, and so we went through, you know, the things she wanted to focus on in a session, and then I actually did a visualization there. Back then at the Olympics, it was, we were still in tape mode. You know, everybody was doing tapes rather than CDs. I did a combination of both for her, actually, making the transition into CDs then. So I had a portable, you know, tape player, and I just recorded the visualization right there. But it was very, specific to what she had just learned in that session. So it was, you know, kind of that was really helpful for her, and she was able to, you know, use that since it was, you know, if you could do a, that's one way you could work with an athlete in a sports camp or in the trenches, so to speak, is actually go out on the field with them, and if you're not their coach, you know, if they have another athletic coach there, watch and listen to what their athletic coach is saying to them, get those cues, and then either right there, if you have an opportunity, if they're, you know, sitting on the sidelines, you can talk with them, or after their practice session, then you can have a session with that person and make them a mental training session. It could be a visualization. It could be, you know, the power words, or it could be anything that they want to help them get ready. Sometimes it would be, and we'd just deal with whatever was happening with her at the moment. Sometimes it was the media, you know, with the athletics, you know, at the Olympics, there's media everywhere, and always wanting their attention and time, and that can be a real distraction. You know, Amy, like you were talking about with distractions, and so it can be a way to, you know, you want to. I talked with her about how to be able to handle the media and how to and decide who she's going to talk to and when to say yes and when to say no and how to protect her time and just how to be able to relax and all. So through all of that and not get as distracted, but really keep focus on her training and what she was doing. So yeah, I just wanted to give that as a story, kind of an example of how I worked with somebody in the ultimate trenches of, you know, at the Olympic Training Center, and how it, you know, it just was really helpful for her to have a confidant, somebody on the sidelines to be able to talk to afterward that wasn't so involved with her coaching, and I was, you know, I was kind of a private consultant, and so she didn't have to worry about, everything was private and confidential, and she felt, whatever, if she was having a problem with her coach or interacting, she could say anything she wanted to me, and knowing that that's not going to get back to anyone else, and just feel like she could get things off her chest. And so, yeah, it worked out great. And so then she invited me into the Olympic Village, where I got to actually see her dorm room there, and you know, where all the athletes stay, and go around to the they actually have a pool there where the athletes, not the training pool, but it's actually just a fun swimming, you know, Olympic-sized pool where all the athletes just hang out and relax. So it was fun to see that whole environment and huge, you know, 15,000 athletes all housed there. So I just wanted to give you a flavor of that, you know, what that was like. So, yeah, Amy, that's one example of, you know, working with people. Just want to kind of start with a little story. But can you tell me, Amy, what kind of give an example of with your tennis? It was tennis camp, and what was the other camp?
Yeah, the other one was the ballet students, but that's going to be in more of a classroom, so that'll be different.
Okay.
I'll be doing more exercises with them. But one of the things that I was thinking of with the tennis players was to, and somebody had suggested this to me who works with a lot of athletes also, was to try to get them to just think about the next ball. I'm going to do a little bit better on the next ball. So they're just thinking about the next ball, the next shot. My footwork is going to be a little bit faster on the next shot.
Uh-huh.
So to kind of keep them in the moment and be aware of what they're doing, but try not to judge it. But the next ball, that's all I'm focusing on, is the next one.
Yeah, that's perfect, yeah, as opposed to, they're usually thinking about the last ball and how I screwed up.
Right, yeah, that's...
and which we can't have any control over, of course. So, yeah, that's great. So, and you said, pinpoint focus, focusing on the sound of the ball.
Mm-hmm. And also putting maybe a big X with chalk on the court, so that that's where they're aiming. They have a visual thing to look at, mm-hmm. and to aim the ball at,
uh-huh.
and maybe to put an X on the ball, like a black X on the ball, so that they're really trying to watch the ball very closely, and it to distract them from thinking about all the other things that can go through their mind.
Yeah. So is an X on the court and an X on the ball?
Yeah, I mean, you could do both.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a good idea, too, because then you, if you put, actually write that X out there on the court, then you're focusing on that, and so you get that picture, that visual in your mind. And then even if the next game, you know, there's no X on the court, obviously, but your mind can obviously really have that picture there.
Right, yeah, they could visualize the X, or to maybe see how close they can get that ball to the X, because that will really take them away from, oh, am I winning this point? I'm just so focused on hitting. Maybe put two X's, maybe put one deep in the court on one side and one on the other, so that they're hitting the ball where they want to, deep into the corners, but they're trying to hit one or both of the X's.
Uh-huh.
I think that could be fun for them.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, making it a game kind of thing is really good, too, yeah. So,
but is it good to do, like, if you start doing games, then do you want to stay away from a competition? Like, does that detract from what I'm trying to do, is to get them to just focus on different things, and now they're worried about, oh, how many times am I going to hit it? Oh, the other person hit it five.
Yeah, exactly. I think, yeah, when you're doing a summer camp or some practice like that, yeah, it's really nice to take the competition. So it depends on the athlete. Everybody's different with their personalities, and if you have full rein of what you can do, I'd say, yeah, try to take the, at first, when you're learning something, it's always best to just learn it and trying a new technique, you know, doing it in a relaxed environment, a fun environment, and then later on, you know, after you get good at something, then or closer to a competition, let's say, that's coming up, then you can put the competitive aspect into it once they're, you know, feeling confident at it. But right away, I think it's better to, yeah, not have so much competition, and just see, so that everybody can do, you know, just think about themselves, you know, if they're competing, it's just competing with themselves, or just seeing how well can I do. But the effort level is the most important thing. Yeah,
uh-huh.
How well can I focus, and how well can I keep my mind on the X on the court, as opposed to, like you say, points, because they're always, and it would be a really welcome, kind of like a vacation for them, a mental vacation, to be able to, you know, just focus on the fun part, this technique, as opposed to, because they're so used to, you know, always having to be judged, probably, and always focus on winning or losing, right? Yeah. So technique and focus and not so much on rating themselves is how did I feel? Ask them that. How did I feel about that? If they want to rate themselves, just rate themselves on things like how much fun was this exercise, or rate that 1 to 10, or how
okay.
did I how focused was I? Rate that 1 to 10. How focused was I on the X? And how many times did my mind go to something else? Did I get distracted? And then that could be a competition, but it's it's more of an internal mental competition,
right,
as opposed to just the points that they're used to. Say, how many times can I keep focused and not get distracted, and how long can I keep my focus?
Okay.
Yeah. Those are great things. And you said there was something about focus on the sound of the ball that they're working on too?
Yeah, when the ball bounces, to say bounce, and then when they hit it, to say hit. So they're focusing on the timing of it, so it's going to bounce, and then they're going to hit it. So every time the ball bounces, they have to say bounce, and then when they hit it, they have to say hit. So they're really aware of the timing of it.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. Yeah.
The sight. Yeah, it's the sight and the sound of the ball.
Mhm. Yeah, and you're bringing in more senses. You're kind of doubling your sensory awareness.
Mhm.
Not only the sight, but the sound. And then you're reinforcing it with their saying that whenever you say something. The learning, everybody has different modes of learning. Some people are more visual, some are more auditory, some are more kinesthetic, and some people are more, use all of those the same amount. So if someone, a lot of people do have that auditory sense. If if you learn something on a screen, on in a classroom, and you just read some text, that's one level of learning. But that's why videos are so powerful. If you see something on a video where somebody's describing something and you're reading bullet points, you're actually reading something and you're hearing the audio of them and describing it, it's much more powerful. And learning happens much more quickly, and it's, you're more involved, more engaged.
I had another idea that I wanted to ask you about.
Okay.
About playing music, like bringing a boombox or something, and playing the music while they're on the court doing the drills, and having them pick an animal that they think that they might run like or look like when they're moving, and to kind of emulate the animal, like a gazelle or something, something quick and aggressive, and they
yeah.
might have fun with that.
Yeah, I did that with, that's a great idea, and I use that a lot with athletes in the Olympics, last summer when I was at the London Olympics, and leading up to them, I worked with Shannon Roberry, who was 15, on our U.S. Olympic team for track and field, and hopefully we'll be seeing her soon again, working with her again toward the World Track and Field Championships that are coming up. The Nationals will be next weekend, and then the World Championships are in August 12th or so in Russia. So anyway, with Shannon, she was out there. Example of how I used an animal like that was with which your athletes could do too. You can use it in any sport, I think. She was having trouble with in the 1500 meters. You're running around the track, and there's only so much space, and everybody's vying for that same space, and you can easily get knocked down or pushed around, and or you know, somebody stepping on your toes, and so it's really more of a contact. It can be a contact sport out there. You know, it's very common to see somebody fall, and so you have to really hold your own. And so I said, well, Shannon, what kind of animal would you think would emulate the kind of qualities that you would like to have? And she said, well, at first she said a lion. She said, no, I think a tiger would be the best because they're, you know, they're ferocious, they're aggressive, they're fast, but they're also powerful and aggressive. And they, you see how they sit back in the, you know, and watch their prey, and they're holding their energy, and you know, just holding back and watching and waiting for just that right moment, and then they dart out just at that right time, and they go for it, and they use all their energy to, you know, just at the right moment to capture their prey. So I said, okay, let's use the tiger to use that as your animal. And right as I was talking with her on the phone, I said, well, let's go to YouTube and look up, you know, tigers running or tigers catching their prey or tigers, you know, speed and power. And so we went to YouTube together. She was on her phone and I was on mine, and she, you know, they were right at her computer. She's looking at, she goes, oh, here's one. Wow, this is great. She was getting all inspired, you know, just looking at the different things that tigers do and how they think and how they act, and she really got into that tiger mentality, and so we worked with that actually for 3 weeks or so before the Olympics, and she got into really kind of looking at these videos of the tigers, and then we used that in our mental training and use that in visualizations that incorporate that into her MP3s, and yeah, it worked great. So she was able to you know, use that in the race and hold her own. You know, visualize, you can either have, she could, sometimes she visualized the tiger being right in front of her, kind of guiding the way and protecting her. And other times she'd visualize herself being a tiger, actually being that animal herself and being powerful. So you could have the animal being with you or also right in front of you, or also internalizing those characteristics of being an animal. Does that kind of make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it really worked. You know, she felt like she was a lot stronger out there. Instead of before, she was feeling really timid and feeling like she was going to get knocked around and get pushed around by the other athletes controlling the race. Now she felt like she controlled the race or could hold her own in it. And so as a result, she ended up getting sixth place. She thought, you know, she was really close to meddling. It, you know, she was happy with that and didn't get knocked down. That's the important thing. Was able to do really well. So, yeah. So that's one example. Like for, like the gazelle, you could do the same thing, Amy, with tennis. Yeah, picture, have them go to go to YouTube and look at those kind of animals and watch them, and then visualize them right before they go to sleep at night, and then the next day, you know, be out there and say, and maybe have them as an exercise, they could write down, you know, what are all the when you saw the videos, or what are all the characteristics of a gazelle, or how do they think, how do they act, and what did you notice about the gazelle? You know, they don't have to become an expert or anything, but just you know, thinking about some of the things that they do.
Okay.
And, yeah, and or ask them to pick an animal. It's better if they pick the animal than you. If they can't think of one, then you can offer some, you know, suggestions. They could pick from those. But just picking something that you know, like you say, a fast animal, one that's really light on their feet and all, and then have them imagine that feeling. So that's a really great exercise, yeah, to be a gazelle or be a deer or, you know, whatever it is. that they can do, because a lot of times, yeah, after when you're in sand tennis, you get tired on your feet, right? And you want to be light, so you imagine something. And you can, if they're not, an animal is one way to do it. Another way is picture another great athlete, a great tennis player, Serena Williams or something.
Okay.
Yeah, somebody that they really like, somebody that has the really good style that they want to try to work with, and they could go to YouTube, same thing, and just pick out great. If they're working on their serve, they could search on, serves. If they're want to just focus on women's serves, search on that, or search on, top athletes, Serena Williams serving, and just watch those serves over and over again. And then what I like to have them do with videos is watch a video right before you go to sleep at night, just 5 minutes before you're sleeping, while they're just brushing their teeth or just relaxing, and just watch before sleeping, and then you can tell them that the subconscious, what we think about before we sleep at night, tends to be what we'll dream about, so your subconscious mind is working on it for 8 hours, so if you can put those really good thoughts in your mind right before you sleep, then you'll be able to work on that even while you're sleeping too. So that's another good idea for videos and for picturing animals and stuff. Yeah, and they could then, write about that. You could do a writing exercise with them afterwards of what they, how that was, you could do an exercise with, if you had a gazelle as a coach, and your gazelle was coaching you, giving you tips on what to do in a tennis match, what would that gazelle be telling you, or what would it be showing you? tips from the gazelle.
That's a good idea.
I know it sounds silly, but sometimes the sillier the better. Just getting them out of their regular.
But yeah, what would they be telling you, or what would you want? What would you want them to be telling you? Would that be an appropriate question?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. What would you want them to show you too?
Yeah, okay.
Show you or tell you their secrets, secrets of a gazelle.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah. So, that's really good. And sometimes picturing the using your senses is another exercise of doing things a little differently. Picturing the like with Stacy, when I worked with her with the pole vault, she would try to see the bar lower than it really is, so it made it seem a little easier for her. So you don't necessarily have to stick with reality. That's the great thing about visualization or our mental training, is you can, visualize anything you want. And she would picture the bar up there that she's trying to go over lower than it really is, and it, just made it simpler. So instead of raising the bar, lowering the bar. So in the same way, I was thinking with tennis, they could picture the net slightly lower than it really is. Although they, you want to be accurate too, because obviously don't want to hit the ball into the net. But
what I tell them sometimes is to almost the opposite, is to give themselves a couple of inches above the top of the net, so that there's room for error.
Okay.
So that, when they're hitting their shots, imagine it's a little bit higher so that they don't hit it in the net.
I like that, yeah. Higher. So that works well, yeah, exactly. you can play with it. It doesn't have to be exactly what's there. That's perfect, yeah.
Now, what do you have any suggestions for relaxation techniques for them on the court that they could plug in when they're really in a match and they're starting to feel tight?
Yeah. So they're starting to feel tight. Yeah.
Yeah, they're just feeling a little bit of pressure and they're getting a little nervous and tentative and.
Yeah.
But they it'd have to be something that they can do at the moment on the court.
Yeah, exactly. Of course, the most obvious one is breathing.
Right.
It sounds like it's so obvious. Why even talk about it? But actually, it's so important that we overlook it. And it's something that you don't need any equipment for. You don't need any special, training techniques. Just being aware of breathing and taking maybe, before they walk up to do a serve, taking that deep breath right there before they serve. You can use your breathing in so many different ways. So that you kind of breathe out, let's say you've just made a mistake before that. You can take in a deep breath, and as you breathe out the mistake, breathe out the, anything that just happened before that. So you're just letting it go.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could, I had, an example of a pitcher playing baseball that used to, when he'd throw a bad pitch, he'd come back to the mound and he'd have to do something to get rid of that thought or that energy. In baseball, they call it having a short memory. So I'd have him go back to the pitcher's mound and he'd pick up a small rock, a stone, and he'd throw it backwards, throw it behind him. And he's doing that. As he's doing that, it was like a ritual or a symbol saying, okay, let it go. That's behind me now. And then he could just refocus on the next pitch. So, you could have, in tennis they could do something similar or have a, which it could even be without the stone, you could just take your hand and imagine that there's a stone in your finger and you just, kind of brush it past your thigh. That'd be one technique or anything that symbolizes letting it go. Can you think of something like that a tennis player might do?
Mm-hmm.
Or one of the, you see tennis players often, they'll if they want to refocus or getting tense then or tight, they will turn around and walk back towards the back wall and just, touch the strings on their racket, or they'll play with the strings a little bit. Sometimes they actually are physically trying to make sure the strings are all, on the racket just right. But they just, kind of put their hands, their fingers, nails.
Yeah, they do that a lot.
In the strings, yeah. And it's like a grounding thing, a mechanism, I think.
The Positive Coaching Alliance, what they do is they have this thing where they call flushing your mistakes. So you do a little motion like you're flushing it.
Yeah, like flushing a toilet?
Yeah, let go of the mistake.
Right, yeah, that's good, yeah. Yeah, I went to one workshop, with a guy, I think, was talking about that technique. He actually brought a toilet. It was a small toilet. It was just about the size of your hand. That he actually created them or something, and where it's one of those things that like a refrigerator magnet. You put it on and you flush it, and it makes the sound of flushing.
Oh, that's funny.
So I don't know where he got that from, but you got that sound of the flushing of the toilet. You could use that, but you don't need any special gimmicks or anything. You can just do these things. You want to be able to do it out on the court without having some kind of prop with you. So, yeah, that's a good one. Flushing it down the toilet. And then, yeah, it's like it's all gone, you know, new game. And then saying to yourself, okay, new point, you know, yeah, next new shot, new game, new match, whatever it is. It's, you know, being able to start fresh, you know, and say it's you know, let it go, okay. If you can have them, you know, with it's getting tight and all, it's usually because of something, yeah, there's pressure building up, and so if they can say something to themselves, develop some power words, like what ask them what would be helpful for them to say, like it's okay, or yeah, let it go, that's behind me, you know, give them some examples, ask them first what's a good thing to say to yourself, or just say next shot, I'm getting the next shot, or just like you say, just this play, and those kind of things are good to say to them afterwards. So yeah, and just even putting their hand with the breathing, putting your hand on your abdomen, having that kinesthetic sensation, I think is good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that they remind themselves to breathe, properly. Because when we're getting tight, when we're getting, you know, nervous, anxious, usually the breathing goes straight to that, you know, the chest, and we're doing short, shallow breathing. Sure, and so most of the not enough oxygen is getting in. And so, it's you know, they're having trouble usually with that, creates more, you know, tension when you're, you know, breathing like that. And in extreme case, it can lead to like panic. Some athletes, it you know, doesn't happen as often, but you might get some athletes. I've had, you know, several clients who actually had a panic attack where. And that's where kind of all your systems are getting tight and nervous at the same time, and so you're having trouble breathing, and the heart rate is going really fast, and it can lead to, like, passing out. So usually that doesn't happen, but it's just something that, in case you run across someone that's had a panic attack, it's usually when one or two things in the body get stressed at a time. And you could ask them, you know, what each person is different, you know, ask them what are your signs of stress, and you know, some people it's you know, they breathe too much from the chest, some people might notice their you know, the heart rate goes faster, some people might notice, you know, butterflies in the stomach, or some people get so nervous that their stomach, it really gets upset, they throw up. I've had, you know, Peggy Fleming, who was the, you know, Olympic gold medalist figure skater many years ago. Actually got to meet her, and she lives in the Bay Area here, and she would tell me, I interviewed her, and she said before every competition she'd throw up. So she got so nervous. So, but then she ended up, you know, doing great anyway. So she just knew that was her sign of stress, and so it's good to ask your athletes. You know, that'd be a good kind of self-awareness exercise. You know, asking them what does your body do when you get stressed out, so you can be aware of it, and then you can then try to be aware. The key is early awareness and being able to do something about it before it gets to an extreme point. Right. So, yeah, and then being able to do something, that breathing can really make a difference, and just focusing on, like you say, the next thing that you have to do. What's next? Is really a good way to keep your relaxation level down. What's next, and breaking it down into small pieces when you feel overwhelmed. Right.
Okay.
Yeah, let's see. So there's that. Those are some relaxation techniques, and I'd say, the breathing is the best one, I think. And then power, you know, soothing words to yourself, of the power words. I can, you know, confidence kinds of words are good. Or if you want to relax, you can actually just say to yourself, I am relaxed, or I'm becoming, it's easy to relax. That's a good phrase to say to yourself. It's easy to relax, and keeping it in the positive tense. So I'm relaxing now, saying that to yourself. I'm relaxing now. Every moment I'm becoming more relaxed. So those are good statements to say. And you can say I'm relaxing into this next shot, or relax and focus is good to. So a lot of athletes think, oh, if I relax too much, then I'm not going to be able to perform, or I'll be too relaxed and I'll be too laid back and not be able to react. But it is, I think, if you can emphasize to athletes that it's possible to, the best situation is to be relaxed and focused, and the best athletes perform well when they're relaxed, and then they're able to do exactly what they can do, because their thinking is a lot more clear. So finding that kind of right zone, and a lot of that can be regulated by breathing. I think if you're, you know, if you feel like you're too relaxed, then you can jump up and down and breathe a little faster. If you're not, if you need to relax more, then just, put your hand on your abdomen and take a few deep breaths. And, just, you can kind of go back and forth and, reset your breathing. It's just a kind of like a regulation, inner regulation that you can do. Those are really good. Another good phrase, I think, is just an overall good reassuring phrase when you're, feeling tense or nervous, is just saying, everything is turning out just fine. Or everything is going to turn out just fine, like right before a practice or competition.
Okay.
Just fine, just an overall, it's kind of like your parents would say, hey, it's all going to be okay. And then there's, I call it, another technique is what I call the reset button. Hitting a reset button just, so that if it feels like oftentimes when people get nervous, there's just, things that keep going wrong or they're spiraling or something, and so you need to, kind of say, hey, wait a minute, just reset and start over and get back to where I want to be. So if you can, you could actually have them imagine a button, it's so great on computers, we've got a reset button. If things aren't going right, you just hit that and you reset, restart, reboot your computer and everything starts fresh and hopefully it works better. Same thing with... just any appliance, right? So nice to have that reset button, and wouldn't it be great if we all just had that? We could incorporate that same kind of technique into. So I did that with Shannon at the Olympics, being able to just even in the middle of a race, when if she'd get bumped around, and somebody's elbow would be elbowing her. She'd just say to herself, okay, reset, take a deep breath, reset, and then she'd just say so that she wasn't going to let that bother her, and she'd just, find her space, put out her elbows, and just say, okay, I'm getting out of this situation, and she'd try to find a clear spot, and she'd just say to herself, okay, I'm resetting. And so she would just be able to move forward in the race and not let what just happened continue to bother her. So that's a great one, too, to just hit that, and in life in general, it's great to have that reset button. If you're, you know, in a conversation where it's not going well, you know, take a few deep breaths and just say, hey, let's reset here. So, yeah, does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
Yeah. Do you have other questions about the tennis and or ballet? What you could do with that?
Let's see.
Or any situations you want to share, you know, that might come up?
I mean, I think the ballet thing, because I'm going to have them for 10 sessions.
Uh-huh.
So that's going to be more of a program where I...
And that's with the, is it Pennsylvania Ballet?
Yeah, it's their school. It's the first time that they've had this this school for different level kids between 12 and 19.
Uh-huh.
So it'll be good because I'll have them twice a week.
Uh-huh.
Each level. And I was going to do a little sports nutrition and maybe like a wellness profile and some visualizations and maybe some positive affirmations.
Mm-hmm.
And a little bit of balance, you know, like life balance with what they do, and everything is so restricted with their eating and everything.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's great. Is that something you put together, the 10-week program?
Yeah, I'm doing it now. I got to come up with it now, and I'm going to make a manual, like a uh-huh. little workbook for each person.
For each person? Oh, you mean
for each kid. I'm going to have whatever my topics are for the 10 weeks. I'm going to have different worksheets for them and then make a little booklet for them.
Uh-huh.
So they each have a little workbook.
Great, yeah.
So that's what I'm doing now. I'm trying to figure out exactly what I want to put in it for each week.
Yeah, you could use some of the stuff from the workbook that we've got that I'm putting together. And thanks for the reminder. I got to keep working on that for the next section of the workbook.
Yeah, I think some of those things would work well for that.
Yeah, you can adapt them to ballet. Because you were saying, what are some of the challenges with ballet, the dancers?
The competition between them. Everybody sort of vying for the same part.
Mm-hmm.
Working with their injuries. Having to deal with being okay with what their position is, whatever it may be, and then having to be a part of a much bigger unit and to be supportive and all work together.
Yeah. You were saying that a lot of times they're competing for one role, one or two people can get that role.
Right, and then then they have to be okay with that, and they have to act like they're still happy to be a part of the company.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like that everybody's not, sometimes it's not nothing personal, it's just that they're not right for that role. Yeah, they're not the right size or the right style. And whereas athletes often tend to take those decisions personally, right?
Yeah, there is just a lot of competition. And then also one of the big things is being perfectionists. So many of them are perfectionists, and it's a hard lifestyle.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Go ahead. And their coaches saw it being perfectionist too and reinforcing that whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or there, do you call them coaches or dance?
Teachers, I guess.
Uh-huh. Yeah, very demanding. So, yeah, being able to have that, you know, yeah, they're very driven, right? And
very.
Yeah. And so there's got to be that balance there of how to be, you know, be the best you can be, but then accept, work on the things you can control and let go of those things you can't control. Being able to, be okay with mistakes and say just kind of the same techniques, some of the similar ones as we were working on with tennis, is kind of being able to hit that reset button if they make a mistake. And because like in tennis, you play a little match and then you get these short little breaks in between, whereas with ballet, you might be going through a whole, if they're actually doing a ballet dance and you make a mistake, you got to just keep going, right?
Yeah, and I think the other thing is the pre-performance anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
But what we were just talking about will apply to that, is having them notice, you know, what are some of the sensations that your body goes through when you're feeling a little bit nervous, and, you know, what are the things that I can help you with to combat that?
Yeah.
And having rituals and like a pre-game, you know, psych plan, pre-dance psych plan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, having a, those rituals are so helpful to have something regular that they do, and that it's always something that they, it's really calming, I think, if you can have them develop that, and then ask them what they do already with a ritual or their psyching up plan, and then being able to add to that if there's in a time not right before a major dance or major performance, but say at a time when they're you're doing this class, well, you could say, okay, is there something we can maybe add to the ritual you're already doing with saying some, visualize a picture of your dance, kind of going over it, the whole thing. You can ask them what's most helpful, visualize the whole dance or parts of the dance. And, maybe the parts that start with the parts that are easy, that come easy, and then work on visualizing the parts that are more difficult. And see yourself doing it over and over, correctly. Yeah, because that can really help, I think, with, easing your anxiety, too, is visualizing the tough parts and seeing yourself getting it through it okay, and then, but not just once, but kind of repeat that over and over in your mind, so that by the time you get to the dance, you've seen it hundreds of times in your mind already, and it's just like, oh, okay, my body knows what to do.
Mm-hmm.
I used to do that for the Ironman when I get off the, like the swim, come out of the swim, and 2.4 mile swim, and then get on the bike. There's a lot of things that can mess up, or you could forget your, where everything is, and you could put your change clothes, put on your helmet, or and bike shoes, and all that stuff. In the earlier days, we didn't have people to actually change clothes. We didn't just go right from one. Get right on the bike, and so there are lots of things you could mess up on when you're nervous. So I'd visualize that part over and over again, that transition. So, yeah, if they can add to that the visualization, then that's, and add to their ritual something that helps, like breathing. You know, if they're not, ask them, you know, in the, their ritual beforehand, are they doing any, you know, abdominal breathing? And if they aren't, that's something that's really valuable. You could have them add to it. You know, and even with people think that, well, breathing is only for, you know, kind of relaxing before you go to bed, but it's actually something we, you know, we need to do throughout the day. You can do it right before their dance, and then even during the dance, there's probably, you know, there's real active times, and then there might be a little time when they're just standing waiting for the next move, and they could still do another deep breath to hit that reset button again, right? So, yeah, so those are great. And that's, yeah, it's great that you were able to put that together. Can you share, I don't know, how you were able to, you know, with other, or other coaches here, how you were able to, you know, get that program or going, how you put, you know, approach them and put that together, the 10-week program?
Sure. Well, I had had some meetings with the artistic director about working with the professional dancers, and so we came up with two plans. He wanted me to do workshops throughout the year with the professional dancers, which I did, and then because the school, especially the summer camp, was new, they wanted to institute this type of training in their program. So we came up with a schedule that we thought would work well with the timing of what the kids would be doing. And then I told them that I thought doing an hour on Monday and an hour on Thursday would be good with each group. And so then it doubles because I've got two different age groups. So that's going to be, it's going to be a lot. It'll be great working with them. There'll be a lot of kids. And then it's for 5 weeks, so it comes to 10 sessions. So what I'm doing now is I'm mapping out with all of the materials that I have, the things that I think would be the most useful for their program. That's the hard part, is just narrowing down what I'm going to use, because I have a lot of information.
Yeah. And so you just got it, you met with the leaders there and got it approved and all.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So I had a couple of meetings, and then they put me in touch with the head of the school. Mm-hmm. And but I really think it trickled down from the artistic director. He was the one who said, I believe in this. And also I think it helps that his daughter is one of the best competitive tennis players in the area here. And So he understands, and he was a dancer himself, how important, you know, this type of training is and how important it is to be mentally tough. So I think he was the one who gave it really the thumbs up. This is important, and I'd like to see this in the program. And
fantastic.
So it is exciting for me. I think it's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, it might be one of the first sports psychology programs like this, you know, for ballet.
Yeah, I told him I'd like to be their, you know, their person. So
yeah, their go-to person.
Yeah.
And you could get maybe individual clients from that, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did coach one of their principal dancers.
Great.
A little bit.
And if you can do that, you're coaching the principal dancers, then it trickles to the other people, too, I think. You know, that if you get good results there, they can tell, they'll often, well, it depends on how competitive they are, I guess. Sometimes they don't want to share that info with other people. But they, if they're, you know, they have friends and other people that they want to help, they can, you know, oftentimes you'll get referrals from one athlete to the next.
Right. So. Yeah, I think it must be very important to them because they are struggling financially a little bit. I mean, usually the arts always struggle, the orchestra, the ballet. It's a shame, but they do.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, they're making this a part of their program. And the other thing that I'd like to get a little more is a little bit of involvement with the parents.
Uh-huh.
Because some of these kids are, they could be, you know, 12, 13, 14, and to be able to possibly put something together for the parents.
Yeah, that would be great, because that's a really important age, yeah, 13, 14.
Yeah, and then they could pay individually, too. If their kids needed more help or something individual, the parents would just pay for it.
And
wouldn't
that's,
have to
yeah,
go
the parents,
to the ballet.
Yeah, they're the decision makers. The parents, and if you could do a talk, a seminar for them, and show that you're the person that's there, you know, working with their kids already, you know, I bet that they would jump on the chance to opportunity to work, you know, have their kids work with you individually, because they'd see that, oh, wow, this is a chance to for my child to get ahead here, and to not, oftentimes, you know, parents, they'll call me and they say, my child is driving me crazy. it's not only that the kid is struggling, but the parent is going nuts. You know, it trickles to the parents.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
They say, oh, God, my child is so unhappy, and they can do it in practice, but they can't put it together in the real event or the real game. And you hear that all the time, and so the parents get, you know, all they hear is complaints from the kid. So they feel like they're pulling their hair out. They've got to do something to not help themselves and and their kids. So,
well, as they say, you're only as happy as your most unhappy child.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. So, yeah, so that would be great. So, yeah, it's really great work that you're doing. Amy, I'm so excited for you both. And with the tennis, so that's coming up. When is that, the summer camp?
They both start the same week. They both start right after the 4th of July for 5 weeks.
Uh-huh. Yeah, okay. Yeah, maybe we can talk about it a little more in our next session. It would be our next TECI call be June the 27th. And, yeah, just other techniques that you could do right out on the court, you know, just breathing and, you know, just taking the, you know, three P's we talk about, of course, of your performing edge, positive images and power words, present focus, with the positive images, you know, just seeing, you know, if another quick thing they could do is if you, let's say, a tennis player hits the ball into the net, you know, serves it into the net, you know, the mind tends to go there and just keep replaying that, but you want to just take a deep breath and, you know, just breathe it out, let it go, and then just move forward and say, okay, you know, just be able to see the ball going over the net, maybe visualize that a couple times. It doesn't have to be a full-on visualization. They might do that at nighttime, you know, before bed or something, but right out there on the court as they're kind of walking back toward the wall, you know, maybe putting their fingers on their racket, they could, you know, just do a quick visualization one or two times of seeing the ball going over the net just right. If they can, so that's kind of like hitting the reset button in your mind.
Mm-hmm. The other idea I had, I'm going to try to find these. I'm going to try to find orange rubber bands and have them wear them on their left wrist. And any time they get a negative thought, they have to snap the band.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good, yeah. Not held not too hard, of course.
Yeah.
They don't want to be...
just a little.
...bruising themselves, but... yeah, that's great, yeah. Yeah, we talked about that idea in the... you know, some of these calls, but the, you know, actually making it orange as opposed to just a regular, you could make use a regular rubber band. Some people, yeah, you could do there, and then when they're in an actual game or something, if they could still use a rubber band, which is more flesh colored, that isn't so
right,
obvious.
So obvious.
later on, just use that so it's not, they don't want someone that, the other competition to be thinking they're doing something stupid or or special. So, yeah, that's a good one, to snap the band or to, they could also, yeah, just do anything that, that helps them to, you know, like brush their hand past their thigh, you know, just let it go, just like that pitcher did with the stone. Or saying sometimes just something funny, you know, using humor is a really good technique too. You know, thinking of, have them think of like five funny things beforehand. Look at funny, you know, you can search on funny videos on YouTube or a funny joke or something funny that happened to them. And then, you know, when the tension comes up, being able to just walk back and, you know, say, you know, after a shot and just laugh or smile, you know, just think of something funny for just a few moments, and it really helps you to lighten up and you know, let go of what just happened, you know. So humor and laughter is a great technique, whether it's out on the court or even at a break in between a match or something. You know, go back to your coach or a coworker or somebody there and think of something funny to talk about, just to, as a distraction, as a good distraction, a way to, you know, keep yourself away from the, you know, we want to be serious sometimes. There's times to be serious and focused, and then there's times to loosen up, right? And just let go.
Yeah, that's true.
So, yeah, that balance is really important. So, yeah, this is a great discussion, and thanks so much, Amy, for offering to be, well, for your questions, and congratulations on what you're doing with the two summer camps. Yeah.
Well, thanks for all your suggestions.
Yeah, this is great, and yeah, and I'm glad that we could use you, kind of have be a case study here, and just be because you're so doing all this stuff so actively, and such a great example of you know, what we can all do with these performing edge coaching techniques. And so keep I'll put this up, you know, the replay up in the members area shortly, and then, you know, anything else that comes up, yeah, other questions, you can email me, or any one of you coaches can email me questions, and we can, you know, go answer those on our, if it's something urgent, I might be able to answer it, you know, just through email right away, or on our next call on June 27th at, you know, 10 Pacific and 1 o'clock Eastern time. So, yeah, sounds great. Any other questions or thoughts, Amy, or?
I have one thought that just came to my head, is, which might be interesting. I don't know if anyone else has any interest in this, but at some point in the near future, I would like to approach different companies, and especially law firms, and try to do some of this work. So maybe taking this type of work, high performance training, into a company. You know, what's the best way to sort of transition yourself and apply these concepts into companies, and you know, how do you talk it up? What's the best way to approach different companies for this type of training? 'Cause that would be a, like, plan B for me, is using this in a different capacity.
Yeah. That's a great one. I'm just writing that down here. Yeah, lawyers.
Like, you know, employee wellness. How do you get the best performance out of your employees and out of yourself as an executive?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And companies are always looking for that sort of guidance and willing to pay for it, because they get a lot more productivity and satisfaction from their employees that way. Yeah, and less health costs. One way is, you know, talking about the benefits that it really could save them huge amounts of millions of dollars of health costs if it's a large company. If it's even one person, you know, an employee that gets sick or, you know, gets a major problem can, you know, can cost tens of thousands of dollars and or more in health costs. So it's companies are always willing to wanting to help with that. Yeah, how to keep the employees happy and healthy. I know I've got one client that works at Genentech out here in the Bay Area, a biomedical research company, and just amazing. Yeah, if every company could be like that, they, you know, provide all kinds of, you know, seminars and workshops for their employees, and they get all kinds of, you know, paid vacation, and every 6 years, my a client that works there, every 6 years, they're eligible for a sabbatical, where they get 8 weeks paid vacation, basically, and go off and do, you know, some great trip somewhere. And then every next 6 years later, they get another one. Every is that amazing or what? It's like a company, you know, that could do that kind of thing. It would be incredible. And they have lots of, you know, a gym there and lots of great programs. So they're open to different talks and things. So I know that companies like that, if you can find, just like you did with Amy, you did with the ballet company, approaching the artistic director, finding someone that is really into what you're doing and understands the value of mental training and high performance training, and then you just, it doesn't matter what position they're, even if they're in a lower position, they can, if they really believe in what you're doing, they can get you to a higher person, just mm-hmm. like you worked your way up to the, you know, director of the company for your ballet.
Yeah, and maybe put a program together for them.
Yeah, exactly.
Like your Performing Edge employee wellness program.
Yeah. That would be great, yeah. So, yeah, think about that. And yeah, we can talk about that more maybe on our next call here, too. Yeah, brainstorm some things, and if you have questions, yeah, just email them as you get ideas, and then, yeah, that's a great topic, so we can let's talk about that more on our next call, too. So that sounds great. Okay, well, thanks, Amy. And
thank you very much.
Yeah,
I really appreciate it.
Lots of people listening in that or just have their phones on mute here. So
either that or they're all sleeping.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, thanks everyone for coming and today and I taking your time out of the day because these calls are really valuable and investing your time in this, you know, our ongoing training here is really, important to keep in touch, to, you know, always be exploring new ideas. We're always pushing forward here with new things to do, so this is great. So, yeah, thanks. And Amy, congratulations again. Yeah, your ballet and your summer tennis. Good luck with the summer camps here. And we'll be talking more next time.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay, sounds great. Have a great week, everyone, and we'll talk soon. And this recording will be up in the next, real shortly here, on the website on performingedgecoach.com. So I'm Dr. Joanne Dahlketter. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you. Okay, bye now.
Bye.